Well, folks, I hope you're enjoying looking through the story of Elijah. It's sort of impossible to make it boring. You might say I'm doing a good job of trying, but it is pretty impossible to make it boring. What do we have so far? We have evil King Ahab marries a witch called Jezebel, takes Israel down the tubes, and to the very point where they're trying to make Baal the god of Israel, build a temple to Baal in the capital city. Things could not be worse in Israel. And then comes along Elijah the Tishbite. And then we looked at some of the experiences after Elijah announces to Ahab that there's going to be drought for 3.5 years due to his ungodliness. Then Elijah kind of disappears for a while. He goes to kind of a school, in a sense, where the Lord makes him into a man of God. He has a season beside a brook where he's fed by birds and he learns to be alone with God and trust God. And then he goes to live with a widow at a place called Zarephath, which is actually the place that Jezebel's from. It's the center of Baal worship in the world. And he spends his time there, maybe 2.5 years there, learning that you can trust in God alone. So he learns to be alone with God and he learns to trust alone in God. And after all of that, the Lord tells him, "You've been hiding long enough." And that's a word for us all. You've been hiding long enough. Now you need to show yourself to Ahab. Show yourself to the man who wants to cut your head off. Show yourself to the man who has killed all these other prophets. Show yourself to him. Show yourself publicly to be the prophet of God. And Ahab's been searching the nations for him. But now Ahab presents himself to him. And last week we sort of finished off with the moment where Ahab and Elijah meet together for the first time in 3.5 years. Ahab believing that it's Elijah's fault that it hasn't rained for 3.5 years because he spoiled everything. And Elijah believing, quite rightly, that this is Ahab's fault because he's worshipping other gods. And as God promised, he shut off the water. And Ahab says something to him, "Is it you, you troubler of Israel?" And folks, here's a very simple point that I would love you to really get a hold of and consider deeply today, is this: that if you are a Christian in today's society, you will be viewed as a troubler, as a troublemaker. And if you don't believe that, just look at the Facebook profiles of organizations like EA or Christian Concern or various different other organizations. Just listen to Love for Life speaking for a little while. Come along tonight and hear a bit from Jude. If you are a Christian who upholds Christian values, you are going to be considered a troublemaker. If in your workplace you uphold Christian values, you're going to seem like a troublemaker. Would you agree? Because you are increasingly out of step with the nation. I mean, Israel should have been a God-believing nation. It should have been a Yahweh-worshipping nation. Northern Ireland and the UK and the Republic of Ireland, these are meant to be places where they're Christian nations, but increasingly to be a person who holds Christian values means that you will be considered a troublemaker. But then Elijah says differently. He says, "Well, I'm not the troublemaker. You're the troublemaker. You're the person who's trying to take us away from the truth of God and the word of God and the values of God." And then he proposes something. He says this: "Now therefore, send and gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel, and the 450 prophets of Baal, and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So basically, Elijah decides, right, okay, if you think it's all my fault, and you know, Baal or Baal is the real God, okay, and I think it's all your fault, and Yahweh is the real God, then let's figure it out, and let's go up the top of this mountain. Now, Carmel is not the tallest mountain, but it is a mountain with a huge flat area on top. It's an area that you could have, you know, maybe 8 football pitches on the top of. It's a huge, vast area, and it's a perfect platform for thousands and thousands and thousands of people to gather. Because, against the sort of children's storybook Bible picture that you might have looked at, where you've got sort of a few prophets of Baal, and you've got Elijah, and you've got Ahab, and you've got a couple of altars on the top of this mountain. It's not like that at all. This is like all of Israel gathers on top of this mountain. A huge crowd of people gather. And 450 of the prophets of Baal on one side, and Elijah on the other. This is a massive, massive, massive moment where really we're going to see who is the God of the sky? Who is the one who makes it rain? Who is the one who sends the thunder? Who sends the lightning? We're going to figure that out right now. So Ahab goes along with this idea. Ahab sent to all the people of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. They're gathered on this huge area. And Elijah came near to all the people and said. So Elijah, basically, there's all these 450 prophets of Baal here, and Ahab's there, and there's all of these Israelites all around him. And he speaks to them. And here's what he says to them. Israel, how long will you go limping? Should probably have that on the screen. How long will you go limping between two different opinions? How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. And if Baal is God, follow him. Right? So, I mean, you know, let's just make a decision here, Israel. Like, you're trying to do a bit of this and a bit of that. You're trying to do a bit of Baal worship and a bit of Asherah worship and a bit of Yahweh worship. But it's not going to work. How long are you going to do this? Now, this word limping is, of course, limping like unstable walking. Or like one of your legs is longer than the other or something. Okay, limping. It's an unstable walk. And what he's saying to them is, Israel, you are unstable. You know, the way that you're living, trying to worship two gods or three gods, it can't be done. You're limping. And in fact, the same word limping here will be used a little bit later when the prophets of Baal limp around the altar to Baal, trying to get him to send fire down. The other meaning of this word is dancing between two different opinions. And I wonder, is that a word for somebody here? Are we trying to dance between two different opinions? Remember at school, they did a thing called bleep test. And wasn't it basically you had a touch here, run there, touch there, and it got faster and faster and faster. Who's done this bleep test? I think we should all do it today, this morning. Do you think so? No. Okay, many of us have done it. Really, really, really difficult, isn't it? Because it gets faster and faster and faster, and you're running backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. Folks, that is essentially what Elijah's talking about here. How long are you going to dance between? How long are you going to run between these two different opinions? If it's Yahweh, worship Yahweh. If he's the one that brings the rain, if he's the powerful one, if he's the living one, go to him. And if Baal is, and you believe Jezebel, if he's the one, you go over there. You know, stop trying to do two things. You can't do it. And folks, this is a word to us all, isn't it? Because whether little or a lot, we are all divided. You know, divided in our hearts that we try and worship different gods. We run to our idols at times instead of going out and out for Jesus. You know, Dwight Moody, the great preacher and evangelist, or D.L. Moody, as some of you might know, he used to say, is that person an O&O? Are they an O&O? And most people had no idea what he was talking about, but it meant out and out. Are they out and out for Jesus? And how long will you go limping between two different opinions? Here's a really key thing. And it's a key thing because I hear it so much when I go around visiting or speaking to people, even in this parish, so very much. Maybe not many people here. But here's a fascinating thing. Some of us have separated things like being a Christian and being a born-again Christian, you know? And we have this idea that, well, I'm a Christian, but I'm not a born-again Christian. Or I'm a Christian, but I'm not very devout, or whatever. Folks, can I tell you, these categories don't exist. They don't exist. You know, it's either, are you a worshipper of Yahweh and his son Jesus? Or are you a worshipper of other stuff? And there is no middle ground. You cannot run between these things. Because he says that he'll have all or nothing at all. But how long will we dance? I love this from Spurgeon on the next slide. Love a bit of Spurgeon. Where do you see this? It's coming. Thank you. Well done to our AV team. They're down a man or a woman today. Here's what it says. How long? How many more sermons do you want? How many more Sundays must roll away wasted? How many warnings? How many sicknesses? How many toilings of the bell to warn you that you must die? How many graves must be dug for your family before you will be impressed? How many plagues and pestilences must ravage this city before you will turn to God in truth? How long halt ye between two opinions? It's powerful, isn't it? How long? You know, if he's God, we must worship him. If he's God, we must worship him with all that we are. You know, the fascinating thing that is happening right across the church, and I'm seeing more and more and more clergy accept this, as if it's just a cultural trend. And it's the idea that, you know, in church now, people don't really come to church every week. They come to church every couple of weeks. Or they come every twice a month, or they come, you know, and clergy, believe it or not, are actually accepting this. As this is just the way it is, we've got to accept it. Folks, can I tell you, I will never accept that. Ever accept that. And let me tell you that if we do that, especially those of us with kids, we do that, we'll be asking the question in a few years why the teenagers don't go to church. And it's because we have not shown them that it is an utter priority to us. It can be so languishing between these two things, but the calling is serious. How long will we sort of flitter around and dance around? If it's God, let it be God. If it's something else, let it be something else. That's what Elijah's saying. What a powerful word. And a bit like all of you, the response is the people did not answer even a word. Because nobody wants to hear this. We want to be allowed to be nominal, don't we? You know, I've been at this parish. This is now my 9th year. You're saying, it's time you went. And I mean, I have genuinely had people say to me, Simon, this used to be a lovely little place where we didn't get told that we had to do this and had to do that and had to be all out for Jesus. We were just happy. We're not devout. People have said these things to me. And folks, let me tell you, if I allowed that to continue, what would I be doing for anybody's eternal destiny? This is the testimony of the Bible. It's either all for Jesus or not at all. It probably is my last sermon, is it? Should I leave? But it is, seriously. People just said, why don't you just leave us alone? Stop asking us to respond. People have said this to me. I'm just like, I can't. I'm 42. I'm an old man. Okay, I'm going to have to meet the Lord very soon, okay? And if he looks at me and he says, you kept them all happy and you got fancy, comfortable seats in Marlin and there's cushions in the seats in Dollingstown and everybody was happy and we had a few wee events, well, is he going to be pleased with me? So there you go, that's the introduction. The people did not answer him a word. And then Elijah said to the people, I only am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Okay, let's get two bulls and let them choose, the prophets of Baal, one bull for themselves and cut it into pieces and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. No tricks, okay? No wee sparks, okay? And no flammable liquids, right? This is going to be dry stuff we're putting up there. And I'll do the same. I'll prepare the other bull and I'll lay it in the wood and I'll not do any tricks. I'll not put any fire to it. You call upon the name of your God. I will call upon the name of the Lord. And the Lord and the God who answers by fire, he is God. Okay? So what Elijah's essentially saying is, okay, I'll help you out. As you're making this decision, if God is real or Baal is real, I'll help you out. We'll do a wee tester. Okay, a wee experiment just so you can be absolutely sure who the real God is. And, you know, it's so sad, isn't it, that the Israelites, the people who are one through the Red Sea and one through the Jordan, for whom the 10 plagues fell. They go, actually, yes, that would be really helpful. If we could have this wee tester just to make sure which is the real God, that would be really, really helpful. It says, where does it say it? Yes, the people answered, it is well spoken. We like this idea. We like this idea. And Elijah told the prophet of Baal, why don't you fellas go first? There's 450 of you. It's just me and me alone. Why don't you guys go first? Okay. And the prophet of Baal choose a bull, prepare it, called upon the name of Baal, it should be. I say Baal, but it should be Baal. From morning until noon, for hours and hours and hours, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was, listen to this, there was no voice and no one answered. I wonder why. And they limped around the altar. They danced around the altar. Same word as earlier. They limped around the altar. They danced around the altar. And at noon, Elijah mocked them. Now, I don't know if it's ever okay to be sarcastic. I don't want to say that this is your sort of proof text if you're a sarky brute. All right? It's the, what is it, lowest form of wit? Highest form of intelligence? I don't know if you're sarky. But I think Elijah is really sarcastic here, because here's what he says. You might want to cry aloud. Maybe just, you know, Baal can't hear you. He could be thinking, having a really deep thought, and, you know, he's not just around for you. Or, and this is such a controversial thing in the ancient world, he could be using the bathroom. Okay, he could be relieving himself. So just maybe wait for the sound of a flush before you continue your prayer. Okay, this is the sort of language that he uses. Isaac, I love this, actually, this toilet humor later, if I want to share it with him. Or maybe he's on a wee journey. Or maybe he's having a sleep. And he has to be woken up. And they cried aloud. They cried aloud and cut themselves after their custom. What a horrible religion Baal worship is. They started to slice their flesh with swords and lances until the blood gushed out from them. And listen to this. I think I have this scripture on the screen. And as midday passed, they raved on. They raved on. They loved to rave, these boys, okay? They raved on until the time of the offering of the oblation. But listen to this. And this is true of every idol. This is true of everything that you put above the Lord and that I put above the Lord. Listen to it. There was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention. That's every idol. Okay? Everything that we put. No voice. No one answered. No one paid attention. Now, folks, as we look at that scripture, I said to you that Elijah was very gentlemanly, and he said, now, you go first. Let the 450 prophets of Baal go first. Very gentlemanly. Now, I think he did that for two reasons. The first reason is because I think if he had just went up to the top of Mount Carmel and just said, watch this, God sent fire, right? I think that would have been great. It wouldn't have proved that Baal wasn't real, but it would have proved that Yahweh was real, wouldn't it? But by letting the prophets of Baal go first and letting them do it for hours and hours and hours, crying out, cutting themselves, dancing around, all that sort of stuff, it proved that Baal was a load of rubbish. And folks, this is a really important, and you shouldn't have to say this in a church with an evangelical history like Marilyn Parrish and all that sort of stuff, but here's a really important thing. No other religion will save. Like, you know, no other religion will save. And that's not to say that we are not polite and gracious to people of other faiths and all that sort of stuff, but no other religion will save. There was a church in the Republic allowed someone to go into the pulpit and read the Quran. Absolutely not. It'll never happen here. You don't have a pulpit, the first thing. Okay, but it'll never happen here. Because no other religion will save. I hope you know that. That's the story of the Bible. I know a man, I know of a man, who took a sabbatical. And all he did in his sabbatical, most ministers, and I'd probably do this as well, go to Thailand or something and think very deep thoughts, okay, for their sabbatical. But this man went to his office. And all he did morning to night was read the scripture. Out loud, standing up, every day for months. He read the Bible through maybe 30 times. And somebody said to him, you know, John, what did you get out of that? You know, what did you get out of that? What's the big revelation after reading the Bible through all these times? No. You know what he said? God really hates idolatry. That was the revelation. You read the Bible, just read it back, cover to cover. That was the emerging idea. God really hates idolatry. So the first reason is because he wanted the prophet of Baal have the opportunity to show that Baal is not a real God. Because he's not. The second reason is because Elijah is looking at his watch. And Elijah's looking at his watch because he's going to let them tear away for hours and hours and hours until, it says, the time of the offering of the oblation. Now, what does that mean? This is the evening sacrifice that happens in the Jewish temple. Probably 3 o'clock, although we don't know for absolutely sure, but we're pretty sure it's 3 o'clock. So he lets them tear away until somewhere afternoon to give him time to set up the altar before 3 o'clock, because he wants to do something on the top of Mount Carmel that is Jewish custom and practice. Then Elijah said to the people, come near to me. Remember, thousands of people at the top of Mount Carmel. Just come over to this altar. Come on over. Because he wants them to see. And all the people came near to him. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. Isn't this sad? We'll read in the next chapter, Israel had thrown down the altar. They had thrown down the altar of worship to God. I wonder, how are the altars of worship in our lives? Are they well built? Are they well kept? Or have any of them been thrown down? Elijah took 12 stones. Now, this is really significant because, remember, at this stage, the kingdom of Israel is divided, you know, between Judah and Israel. And the 12 stones speak of unity. There was 12 tribes that God took out of Egypt, and these 12 stones speak of unity, and he builds up these 12 stones. You know, the fire only falls on unity. If there's an issue of unity in your life, do whatever you can to repair it. I have issues of unity in my life, and I have tried to repair it. That's all I have to do before the Lord, okay? I have to do my part to do that, to repair conflict within my life before the Lord. If others don't join with that, that's up to them, but I have to do that, or else how can I expect the fire of God to fall upon me? And with stones he built the altar in the name of the Lord. And listen to this, and he made a trench about the altar as great as would contain 2 seahs of seed. And he put the wood in order and cut the bull in pieces and laid up the wood. And then he said this, fill 4 jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And he said, do it a second time. And they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time. And the water ran round the altar and filled the trench also with water. What a thing. Elijah, he's a man of great confidence, isn't he? I'll see you up the top of the mountain. All he is, thousands of you. I'll see you up there. We'll get a couple of altars. And then he starts to pour water. Now, I'll not even get into the fact, because I don't have time, why he pours water in a drought and wastes all that water in the middle of a drought. But he pours water. He makes it totally inflammable. Here's what I want you to know, though. God has planned all this. We'll see from his prayer in a second. God has planned this. This isn't just some courageous sort of person who's just full of zeal and vigor, and he's just decided to do this himself. The Lord has told him to do this. So he does this, totally saturates. And it says this, at the time of the offering of the oblation, remember, he's timing this. He wants to do something in sync with the will of God. Elijah the prophet came near and said, and here's his prayer. Now remember, there have been hours and hours and hours and hours of passionate dancing prayers, cutting prayers, bleeding prayers from the prophets of Baal. Hours of it. And for every 60 minutes of that, Elijah's about to pray a prayer of about 60 words. Elijah the prophet came near and said, O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Done all this as you told me to. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you are Lord, our God, and that you have turned their hearts back. That's his prayer. His prayer is essentially, God be glorified. I have been obedient to you. Please vindicate me. And Lord, revive the people of Israel. That's his prayer. And for their hours and hours and hours of Baal worship and frenzy, he prays a prayer about 60 words. I think I've got a wee slide here that just says something about this. Thanks, Case. Come on. Ah, Elijah's petition has lasted less than a minute, but produced spectacular results. The difference lay in the one addressed. And what happened? When all the people saw it, then the fire, verse 38, then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up all the water that was in the trench. Goodness gracious. What? Great ball of fire, isn't it? Burned up even a hole in the ground. You know, you might think that you're totally inflammable because of stuff you've done, or, you know, because you don't think you're very special. You think, why would God set me on fire? Nothing can stop him setting on fire if he wants to. His water was doused over this altar, and yet the fire of God fell upon this altar. What a thing. And that's one answered prayer for Elijah, that the fire falls. But the second answered prayer is that people's hearts would turn, that there'd be a revival, that there'd be a move of God amongst the people. And it says this in verse 39, when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. You know, Elijah's name is, the Lord is my God. And suddenly the people of Israel are saying, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Time like, oh, better finish. You know, folks, I heard somebody say this week. I thought it was so powerful. They said this. They said, what's the miracle here? What's the miracle here? And the person said this. They said, the miracle is that the fire of God didn't just fall on these rebellious people, but it fell on the altar instead. That's the real miracle. God is so patient, isn't he? He's so patient as we dance between opinions, but it's wonderful. The fire of God didn't fall on the people, it fell on the altar. And just be aware that this is a beautiful little glimpse into the gospel. Because there will be a sacrifice that will beat all sacrifices. There will be so much more than a bull put on a wet altar. There'll be a lamb put on a cross. And that sacrifice will happen on a mountain too. And instead of the Lord's judgment falling upon us, the Bible tells us that it falls upon Jesus. That he who is without sin became sin for us, so that we might become the righteousness of God. And because the fire and the judgment of God fell upon Jesus, it does not need to fall upon us. And if God is so gracious, if God is so merciful, if God is so loving, if he is so kind, how long will we dance? Will we not be out and out believers for him?